Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, we'll hear about the summer lunch bus program from Stephen Lattimore, and Brandon Smith reports on Governor Eric Holcomb about the federal health care reform and its impact on the state. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. A Planned Parenthood clinic in Northwest Indiana has halted abortions because of a state law that involves doctors admitting privileges. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports this is the first time the state has used that law to stop abortion services.
In a letter earlier this month, the Indiana State Department of Health told the mayor of Planned Parenthood to stop performing abortions because a doctor with admitting privileges had ended their relationship with the clinic. State law requires all abortion clinics to have an agreement with at least one doctor who has admitting privileges at a local hospital. Indiana's physician admitting law went into effect 2 years ago, and Indiana Right to Life president and CEO Mike Fitcher says it provides continuity of care.
And we're really pleased that the state is taking this health and safety law seriously.
The halt at Maryville Clinic means Hoosier women only have access to abortion services at 5 clinics in 3 counties. Planned Parenthood has called the law restrictive because it makes it more difficult to hire doctors. In a statement, President and CEO Christy Gillespie says the organization is confident it will once again provide abortion care at the Maryville Center soon. The location is still open and providing family planning and pre-lab services. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Governor Eric Holcomb announced Thursday the creation of a new state cabinet position to focus on talent development and recruitment. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports LaPorte Mayor Blair Milo will become the state's first Secretary of Career Connections and Talent.
Holcomb says Blair Milo, in her new role, will work with state agencies, the business community, and higher education institutions. The goal? Ensure workforce development priorities are aligned to help meet future job needs.
That we're not just sitting on data, but that it's actually connecting with the employers, with the people, most importantly, so that they have that ticket to their success in their hand at any station of life.
Holcomb says he created a new cabinet position as a way to focus on the issue. He notes the Department of Workforce Development, in his words, has their hands full. Milo says she's excited to build on the work she says Indiana has done to attract businesses to the state.
The next piece to take us to the next level is to coordinate the people component.
The new position will oversee the state personnel department and utilize its staff. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. During the summer months, many students who get food from school lunches go hungry. Lakeshore Public Radio's Stephen Lattimore has the story on the Chicago Food Depository and how they have been working to keep those kids fed with the summer lunch bus.
Here you go, sweetie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You got my love.
Thank you.
Since 2004, the Greater Chicago Food Depository has been distributing meals during the summer months to anyone under 18, no questions asked. Last year, the Food Depository handed out more than 560,000 meals at 278 summer feeding sites. Brian Castro is with the Chicago Food Depository.
Food insecurity in Chicago has been on the decline for the last few years, ever since the Great Recession. It's been going down ever since. However, it's still a very important and prevalent issue. However, there are still people who face the problem of, especially children, where their parents need to make a trade-off between supplying the food versus, paying for the other bills, like the electric bills, gas bills. So what we do is we try to access the areas of Chicago where kids are most likely to be affected by food insecurity, and we target those areas and provide them with healthy nutritional meals.
At the site in Lansing, Illinois, at the public library, about 20 kids take advantage of the free lunch program from 11:50 to 12:10. Some come from area daycare centers.
They have an educational week, and so them coming here, it helps them out so they can get lunch, for the day, and that way they don't be hungry and stuff like that throughout the day or whatever, but they will go back to the daycare and eat. But it's just as nice that they have this going on where they bring the food to the kids.
The lunch bus travels to 24 sites on 4 routes throughout Chicagoland and the suburbs every summer weekday. The lunch bus serves approximately 4,000 meals every week. In Lansing, Stephen Lattimore, Lakes Republic Radio.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. A National Fair Housing Group says Deutsche Bank and two other businesses were less likely to maintain their foreclosed homes in majority black areas of 30 cities, including Indianapolis and Gary. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Annie Ropeek reports a new version of a federal complaint expands the investigation.
The National Fair Housing Alliance and 19 local organizations first filed the complaint against Deutsche Bank in 2014. Now they're also naming maintenance companies Aquin Financial and Altasource. The complaint says these companies were more likely to let empty bank-owned homes become blighted or derelict in mostly black neighborhoods than in mostly white ones. And it says they weren't trying as hard to sell those homes. The complaint includes analysis of 22 properties in Gary and 18 in Indianapolis, where Amy Nelson is executive director of Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. She says once the bank takes back a house, it's required to keep it up to code.
To the homeowner who lives nearby or next door to a vacant home that's not being properly maintained, it can be extremely significant. Their property values have been shown to be impacted, and that is by that homeowner doing nothing wrong.
Nelson says they hope the allegations will prompt Deutsche Bank to change its practices. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Governor Eric Holcomb continues to avoid specifics when it comes to the impact that the federal health care reform could have on the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has the story.
Governor Eric Holcomb continues to avoid specifics when it comes to the impact federal health care reform could have on the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on what Holcomb did say about the future of Hoosier health care.
Holcomb sent a so-called letter to Hoosiers Monday to outline what he wants from federal health care reform. That includes greater state control over the issue. But he declined to share specific data on how federal health care legislation debated in the Senate would affect Indiana. And when pressed again Thursday, Holcomb said the Senate bill was too much of a moving target to provide specific data.
We're in a very strong, good position to take care of Hoosiers, and that is my single focus in this whole discussion.
Asked if he would consider a tax increase to help ensure the state's healthcare program, HIP 2.0, remains intact, Holcomb said this.
I'm willing to entertain all sorts of decisions that will be difficult to make that will make sure that we're able to continue taking care of Hoosiers in need.
Holcomb says that he and other governors have urged federal officials to give them flexibility to administer healthcare programs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Wendy Marciniak of the Chesterton Art Fair about the 59th annual Summer Art Fair.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Wendy Marciniak, who is executive director, right?
I am, yes.
With the Chesterton Art Center. And you've been in that position for about, 3 years now?
Close to three, 2.5.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to be accurate as possible. And of course, your big activity, you have year round activities,
we
obviously.
Do.
And you've been there forever. The Chesterton Art Fair has been around for a long time. But the big activity is the Summer Art Fair.
Correct,
Chesterton,
yes.
Art Fair, famous.
Yes, this is our 59th year. So next year it'll be our 60th, and we're already starting to plan some special things mm-hmm. for that. But last year we moved the fair. It was our first year at Dogwood Park in mm-hmm. Chesterton, mm-hmm. and that turned out to be a really, really good move, mm-hmm. not only for the artists, but also for the patrons who came to the fair due to the fact that there was more parking and flat ground mm-hmm. and more room for food vendors and other fun activities, music and children's art experiences. And so we're really looking forward to going back this year.
Good. And my boyhood friend, Joel Janowski, is your board president, isn't he?
He is, yes. And he is very handy being a surveyor in laying out that fair. So that is a win-win.
He told me about that.
Yes, yes. Joel's a great guy and a great board president. So
good.
We're really happy to have him.
Good. I'm glad that's he's sort of emerged as a really wonderful arts volunteer and booster and
Yes, and he is also quite an accomplished watercolorist, too. So he likes to paint and sketch and draw. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he's the total package.
That's fantastic. Well, so what are the dates of this year's show?
This year's fair are Saturday, August 5th and Sunday, August 6th. And we are already praying for perfect weather like we had last year.
Yeah. And you have what? I'm always interested in what the food's going to be.
Okay. Well, we have several local vendors. Ivy's Bohemia House has wonderful eclectic food and wraps, and they'll be there again this year. We have a couple civic organizations that provide walking tacos and hot dogs and that kind of thing. And also Redimax will be there their food truck. Yes.
Ooh.
They were there last year and sold out by 2:30 on Saturday, so they're bringing an extra truck this year.
Goodness.
And you know, they're pretty famous for what they do.
Yeah.
And of course there'll be ice cream and goodies, and everybody needs something sweet at about 3 o'clock, so
and
there'll
how
be
many
plenty.
Artists do you can participate?
This year, I think we will have around 90,
yeah.
And they come from all over the country, and it's a juried fair, so you're getting the cream of the crop and in all media, and so we're really excited.
Well, beyond the art fair, what are some of your upcoming gallery shows?
Let's see. In August, we will be hosting the Ileana Artists Show, and that is also a juried show. And we kind of flip-flop with them every other year, and this is their year, and it's for artists in Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, or I'm sorry, actually, the Ileana Artist Show is in September.
Okay.
In August, we will be hosting 18 artists.
Mm-hmm.
And that group evolved from members of the Chesterton Art Center mm-hmm. years ago. So
I remember when they had their little standalone gallery.
They did, yes, for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Now they do a lot of online shows and regional outlets they visit, and they'll be with us in August.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, we'll host the Ileana Arts Show.
I would imagine the membership of the 18 artists has ebbed and flowed over the years somewhat.
It's never quite 18. Sometimes it goes above and sometimes below, but I think right now they're above. So.
It's nice they can be flexible.
That's right.
That's good. And what's coming up? What is this Art After Dark Gala?
Oh, that's really fun. This will be our 9th year, Friday, November 3rd. And it's held at Sand Creek Country Club in Chesterton. And it's just a really fun night of art. We have silent auction items from artists that are regional and local. And there's fabulous dinner, of course, mm-hmm. at Sand Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And dancing. And we usually have some entertainment. And it's just really a fun night to appreciate the arts.
And is Rita Berg still involved with
that? Rita Berg is very involved. She is, again, our chairman for this uh-huh. lovely affair. And she has many volunteers that help out as well. And it's really supported by the community very well. There's always a lot of really, really nice silent auction items
uh-huh.
to bid on. And it's sort of a night for patrons of the arts to come out and really help support us. And the monies that are raised from both the art fair and the Art After Dark Gala help us run the Art Center for the coming year
mm-hmm.
and especially some of our programming.
Good. Well, Wendy, good luck with everything. You have a lot on your plate, and but this all sounds good.
It is.
Very
Every day
good.
Is fun over
good.
There. So,
well, thank you for being here to tell us about it, and thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
Summer is in full gear, and for many, that means traveling the country and taking some much-needed time off. But if you're like many Americans, there's a good chance you'll also be taking on some debt in order to take your trip. According to a new survey, 74% of people polled say they've gone into debt to pay for a vacation, the average debt being $1,108. Taking on this sort of debt can have a serious impact on your bottom line, and if you take vacations year after year, this can ultimately lead to you saving less money for your future. And Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer offered 5 tips to avoid this debt when he was on Regionally Speaking on Wednesday. Here's that conversation.
I think one of the biggest challenges or the biggest things that in creating the budget that create problems is people just think of the major things, like, you know, your mortgage, your car, your utilities, you know, those bills that you kind of write checks for. When we get into creating a budget, you know, you got to be very specific, include, you know, your discretionary spending, and one of those is absolutely vacation. If you plan on taking vacations, it's no different than Christmas clubs for buying Christmas presents. You know it's going to be a planned expense. Prepare for it, budget for it, and then you don't have to worry about going into debt for it when you do want to take that trip.
Maybe it's the same way, too. I suppose if you want to put it in your budget, put budget in. If you're going to be spending a lot of money with the Publisher's Clearinghouse and buying items from them in the hopes that you'll win the lottery or something.
Yeah, it's always about creating the budget and what you want to prioritize. And one of the nice things about budgeting everything in that planning process is you can really begin then to, like I mentioned, prioritize where you want to spend your dollars without getting into that debt overextending yourself. Because if you begin to overextend yourself, it just begins to compound. Everybody knows that. You know, you start to accumulate money even in a negative way on a credit card or monies that you're starting to rob Peter to pay Paul from things like your retirement accounts or your emergency funds, which could have even bigger impacts for you as you begin to plan for the future.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. And probably that's where, unfortunately, you have to start figuring you're going to have to cut back on something or cut something out here to be able to plan accordingly. You don't want that.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell people it's always about what's going in and what's coming out. You know, I think we're all pretty similar in that if we have money in our pocket, we generally find ways to spend it. But once you kind of budget what dollars you want for specific purposes, you find a way to make it work. You know, people start off every budget with, I pay these, this is what I have left, this is the money I could put in my pocket. They just got to make sure they're including everything before they put the money in their pocket.
And this is probably common sense, too. It goes along with your overall budget to create a budget even while you're on vacation so you don't spend too much then.
Yeah, I mean, when you're out on vacation, it's easy to fall into the spending trap. I mean, you're there, you're relaxed, you're enjoying, and, you know, you find little things or do little extra things, and it's easy to overspend. I mean, we all know that. We've all taken trips before, and, you know, you do things that are, I'll be here for, it's a once-in-a-lifetime type deal, let me go ahead and make this expense, and you just got to understand what the repercussions are of that. And if you budget for everything and plan those vacations, unfortunately, my wife does a very good job of that, Chris. So, you
know. That's good. Well, if you're out there, and just it goes without saying, for example, if you go to, say, to Disney World, you know it's going to have a pretty good idea. It's going to cost you X number of dollars per person, you know, for making the trek down there. But you'll find yourself trapped in the, you're down there, and you'll end up going into the Epcot Center, and you'll end up finding interesting things that you want to buy at the stores, and then you'll get yourself out of budget. That's an easy way to fall into the problems like that, too. And that goes along, too, with another one of your tips I know, which is don't overextend yourself.
Right, exactly. And to the point that you made with Disney, it's actually a very good example, because Disney, if you create a budget to follow during your vacation, I know when we went, there was a lot of things that she found ahead of time, online, prepaid, saved us a ton of money. For certain events, we knew what those expenses were, you know, going into the event. We were able to save by packaging, you know, programs together as opposed to just getting there and individually going to each park. And it saved us a lot of money in the planning process for what it would cost to do the same thing, you know, independently or just showing up to go do.
Now, we talked a lot about here vacation planning, that is to make sure that we don't overextend ourselves on our budget for either the vacation or for our regular budget, too. But you talked as well, too, about making sure that if you haven't done so already to plan for that ultimate vacation, as you call it, for retirement. And you have some tips going along with that. Tell us about them.
Yeah, and I think it just goes back to the basic principles, Chris, that you and I have been talking about here for the last couple of minutes. You know, priority always should be to save for retirement and start planning for that now. The more you plan for it now, the better prepared you're going to be. And having a good budget, you know, one of the ways we always look at it from a budgeting standpoint is what's your dollars coming into your account? What's hitting your account today? And that's probably not going to change that much if you want to maintain the same type of lifestyle moving into the future. It adds kind of all those ancillary things if you're, you know, you're not overextending yourself, if you're creating a budget for the things that you want, not only for vacation but for life. You get a pretty good target idea of what that cost is going to be moving into retirement. So the trips, while they're fun and doing things in the process, we know what our ultimate goal is and where that end game is going to be in terms of budgets and dollars, and then determining your retirement goals and dreams, it becomes then conscious choices about, you know, what I want and what I don't want, and we're not going to be blindsided by it.
Can you really plan for your the costs of what it's going to be for retirement? I mean, you're talking, you know, you're looking 5, 10, 15, 20 years out from even from now. Can you plan that far ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of good that's a good point, because there's a couple of things you have to have. One, you have to have somebody that can at least project for you with anticipated inflation. You know, so most advisors would be able to do that for you. We have a program that can project out for, you know, what it would cost today in today's dollars 10, 15, 18, 20 years from now. And it's not ideal. You know, we don't know what's going to change. I mean, there's so many things, like, you know, with health costs and, you know, what our future is going to hold, how long we're going to be able to work. But so there's always going to be variables. But if you don't at least start to have a target, you know, and identify earlier, it's going to be that much more difficult. I mean, the money's all about time. The sooner you start, you know, putting towards those goals and objectives, the more time allows it to create the type of results that you want. Results become more predictable.
And if you're still working, that you still have an opportunity, if you haven't done so already, to get involved in an employee-sponsored 401k or some other type of retirement plan that's set up through your company, or if you have to set it up yourself with a Roth IRA or something like that, right?
Absolutely. And I think just to give people an idea, relative dollars, I think just most people say, well, if I save X, I think I'll be okay. Well, instead of think, put it within the context of a plan and say, oh, this is really my target, you know, given a normal progression moving into retirement that I need to be. Maybe it's not anywhere near where they thought one way or the other. So it just re-identifies or maybe reprioritizes what they're trying to do and to say, I thought I was saving up, maybe I'm not. Or, you know, I'm saving enough, I feel good, and I can spend more discretionary dollars for vacation, because it goes the other way, too. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people want to have fun, but they're afraid to because they don't know how much they're going to need in retirement. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how much it's going to cost you is a big step. Even if things change along the way, it's a big step at least identifying the target to see if you're at least on the right track.
Yeah, I suppose maybe you're looking into the future and you figure, well, if maybe your idea of fun is to be able to be with family members up at the lake someplace, at the cabin. You don't need a lot of money, but you do need to be able to budget for that accordingly. And this comes back to, as we talked, Greg Hammer, in the past and other conversations about being sure that you have everything all set up here. Planning for your vacation as well as your future, that is through retirement and all, it comes down to making the right kinds of habits, or creating the right kinds of habits, maybe I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, healthy habits are always going to be good habits, and they're not always easy to develop. You know, I start off, you know, most of the time I tell people start with what you can and then build on it. You know, one of the things that could be intimidating, you know, with any type of retirement planning that you do is the target may seem unreachable. And, you know, when people first say, wow, I need to be saving that much, well, you might not be able to create that a habit right away, but just the consistency of starting healthy habits, starting to put away something, like you said, maybe take advantage of, you know, matching dollars, contribution dollars into a 401k, and then just structure to continue to increase that dollar amount. Maybe not take the raises when they come, try to stay in the same budget and add the raises to retirement plans. And if you continue to do that, you know, you add those years on top of one another, stick to your guns and monitor your expenses, and then, you know, maybe tailor what your ideal retirement is or your ideal vacation is based on those needs and wants.
For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with your local host, Sharon Jackson. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.